Well, on Sunday mornings, I have been talking on this text, Opening the Hand of Thought. This is written by my teacher, and I'm one of the translator of this book, and I think this is really a helpful book about the practice of this kind of sitting meditation in Soto Zen tradition called Shikantaza. Shikantaza means just sitting. And today I'd like to talk on two paragraphs on page 59, if we have the text. This is almost the end of the section where Uchiyama Roshi explained about how to sit. And first he explained this, you know, posture, this upright posture, and next breathing, and what is the condition of our mind. Those are three most important points of our sitting practice: upright posture, breathing through nose deeply from abdomen, and letting go of thought. As part of this letting go of thought, he made a kind of a diagram like this, if we have page 54. This means, you know, this is kind of a very unique way of explaining what is happening in our mind. You know, traditionally, no Zen teacher explain in this way. This Z and Z prime is, you know, we really just sitting with this upright posture, breathing smoothly, deeply, quietly, and yet somehow, so this is what Zazen is. But soon after we start to sit, some kind of thought or feeling or emotion come, sometimes even daydreaming start to come. And what Uchiyama Roshi said, whenever we are aware of, you know, thinking, in whatever, you know, whatever stage we are aware of, that we are interacting with things happening in our mind, we have to return to this this line. And yet, next moment, we have another thought. So we have to let go and return to this Z prime. This is upright posture, deep and quiet abdomen, and letting go of thought. And sometimes we become sleepy, and actually sleep. You know, those thinking and sleeping are two possible things we can do with this posture besides just sitting. You know, we cannot do many things in this sitting facing the wall, but at least we can do three things. One is just sitting, and second is thinking, and third is sleeping. And if we sleep, that is not Zazen, it's thinking. I mean, if we think, this is thinking, even when we sit cross-legged, that is thinking, not Zazen. And if you are sleeping in this posture, that is not Zazen, that is sleeping. So thinking is not Zazen, sleeping is not Zazen. Important point is whenever we find we do something else besides just sitting, we return to just sitting. This is his way of explaining what is actually happening in our Zazen. And this is the two paragraphs I'm going to read is final point, Uchiyamaroshi teach, not a teach, but show us the meaning of this, you know, sleeping and return to sitting, and thinking and return to sitting. What is this meaning? You know, if we think with our discriminating mind, if thinking is not zazen and sleeping is not zazen, only when we are on this line, we are doing zazen. That is a kind of a logical conclusion. Then how long will you actually do zazen for, you know, 40 or 50 minutes? Maybe, I don't know. I never, you know, measure, but more time we are, you know, moving this way or moving this way. This is the fact we usually do. But he said, as far as we are, whenever we find we are doing something besides sitting, we return to this Z prime line. And what he is saying is this entire process with this effort of returning, letting go and returning, is the part of just sitting. That is what he is saying in the paragraphs I read today. So let me read the paragraph. So our desires, delusions, and thoughts like A, B, and C, he called this A, B, or C, thought like A, B, and C, things that primarily do not exist and should be denied? Of course not, because as I mentioned before, even thought which produce desire and delusion are a manifestation of the power of life. Yet, if we continue the thought and become carried away by desire and delusion, life becomes obscured and stifled. Stifled? So we wake up to the prime, and from this standpoint of waking up, we are able to see that thought, desires, and delusions are all the scenery of life. During zazen, they are the scenery of zazen. There is a scenery only where there is life. While we are living in this world, there will be happiness and unhappiness, favorable and adverse conditions, interesting and boring things. There will be pleasant times and painful times, times to laugh and times to be sad. All of these are part of the scenery of life. Because we plunge into this scenery, become carried away by it, and end up running helter-skelter, we become frantic and we suffer. In zazen, even though various lifelike images appear to us, we are able to see this scenery of life for what it is by waking up to the prime. So what he, you know, he's talking is, you know, as a common sense of zazen practice in Zen tradition, our purpose, our goal of our zazen is to eliminate all these thinking and not sleep, and so stay on this line. Then there's no thought at all in our mind. Our mind is really clear without any movement, and often that kind of psychological condition is called enlightenment or satori. But according to Dogen Zenji and also Uchiyama Roshi, our goal or purpose of sitting practice is not kind of eliminate of this thinking, or of course we need to wake up from sleeping, but sleeping is also a scenario of our zazen. So that is the point, that is very important point in our practice of zazen. That means the goal or purpose or meaning of our zazen is not to become enlightened in the common idea of no idea, no thought, no thought arising. And you know, in Japanese, the famous expression is munen musso. This is a kind of cliche about whenever people talk about zazen. Zazen should be munen musso. Nen is thought, and so is perception, but this so also can mean thinking. So no thought arises in our mind, so our mind is very clear and clean without any this kind of movement, like a wave. You know, the famous analogy in Mahayana Buddhist teaching is our mind is originally peaceful and quiet, like a water without wind, but somehow because of the wind of ignorance, our mind start to move, and that is delusion. So when ignorance disappears, ceases to be, and those thoughts are ceased to be, then the original condition of, you know, original mind or one mind which has no delusion appeared and shining. And that is a kind of common understanding and image of so-called enlightenment in common Zen teaching. But as I think I introduced last time, Dogen's and this you know, condition of no thought arise and no waves arising is in a common Buddhist term called a kaiin zammai. Kaiin zammai, ocean, seal, samadhi. This means when the wind stop, then the waves stop, then this surface of the ocean become really peaceful and clear, then everything can reflect as they are. That is samadhi. And also, because everything reflect themselves as they are, we can see things clearly without any distortion. That is what is called Kaiin Samadhi, and this is Buddha's Samadhi, Ocean Seal Samadhi. But Dogen Zenji wrote a chapter of Shobo Genzo entitled Kaiin Zammai, and he said our zazen is not stop the wave moving. That means our practice is not stop our mind functioning. But he says when we walk on the surface of the ocean, we also walk on the bottom of the ocean. You know, in the ocean, waves are moving only, you know, for certain depths, not much deep, maybe several feet are moving, but deeper than that, it's very always quiet. So Fat Dogen said, our zazen is, you know, this is our head, and we sit on the bottom of the ocean. Our mind is still moving, but he doesn't say this movement, this wave, is not caused by ignorance. But according to Dogen, this wind is, as he said in the end of the Genjo Koan, this wind is Buddha's wind, the wind of Buddha family. And this wind of Buddha family makes the land into gold and makes the water in the river clean. So that means our practice is not eliminate all those waves. Waves are still there, but we let go of those waves. Waves are actually, you know, a distorted copy of the reality being processed by our subjective like and dislike idea. It's not like Kai in the mind. We cannot see things as they are. The world we see as a perception is distorted. You know, as I always say, things we like, we loved, we attach ourselves, seems much larger than as they are. And things we dislike or we hate seems much really rather than as they are. But things we don't care, you know, seems much smaller than as they are. Or even we don't see it. Even those are in front of our eyes, we don't really pay attention. So our picture of the world is really distorted, incomplete copy of the reality. So if we think that is real reality and grasp it, and whatever thinking I have is an absolutely right view, therefore whatever opinion or idea or you know, thinking against my thinking is wrong or bad or mistaken, so I have to fight against those idea or counter argue. That is really delusion, but that is how we often live. We think my thinking, my idea, is, or my view is right, and their views are wrong. So we have to fight against those people. Unless we eliminate those people, you know, this world cannot be peaceful. And I think logically speaking, that is correct. If all people who have different idea is eliminated, then this world is really beautiful. But it doesn't work in that way. Before I can eliminate all people, maybe I might be eliminated by other people. So it doesn't work. So we need to find how to live together with harmonious, peacefully and harmoniously with other people who has different picture of the world, different distorted view. So somehow we have to, you know, how can I say, communicate with those people, listen to and work together with those people who is from different background. To do so, we need to let go of my self-centered view. And this is the fact we do in our Zazen by letting go. But so letting go and return to this just sitting is important to ungrasp my view. then we, you know, in the case of other, then we see in front of myself only the white wall, nothing there. So we see, you know, all the things happening in our mind when we are sitting in the Zendo is illusion, because it's not there. It's really there is just a wall. But still, within our mind, all different kind of things happening, coming and going. And we start to interact with those things coming and going. In that, when we are doing such a thing, you know, there's a separation between a person sitting and the mind and thinking that is coming and going. And this becomes subject, and this becomes object, and we interact. You know, this separation is really delusion. This separation is the problem. So by letting go, you know, we, how can I say, this separation is gone. So we become one piece. And yet next moment, another thought come up. So we need to let go. That is what we, you know, do keep doing. By doing this, we become free from our self-centered, often egocentric idea, and just be right now, right here. So what we do, actually we do in our zazen by this just sitting, is make determination to do anything, to take any action based on those thoughts coming and going. And these thoughts coming and going are coming from our consciousness. And our consciousness is the result of our past experiences. And that is called karma. So by letting go and do any actions based on those thoughts, at least when we are sitting and letting go, we are liberated from our karma. So this is really liberation from our karma. Unfortunately, when we stand up and go out of the Zendo, we have to use our karma. I often say, you know, in our Zazen, it's like when we drive a car, and when drive a car and we put the gear into neutral, the motor is still moving, but the car doesn't move. And in our Zazen, that is the same. You know, our brain is still working. You know, there's no reason, you know, our brain stop working when we are sitting facing the wall. Our stomach is still digesting, our heart is still beating, and everything is working. All the, you know, all part of my body is still working. There's no reason, only my brain stopped working. So, and the function of, you know, our brain is to produce thinking. So it's very natural to, you know, thought coming up, coming and going. But if we grasp it, then I think. And I think this is true. Therefore, I should do this thing or that thing. That is how we make decisions in our daily lives. But in our Zazen, we stop doing that. So, in a sense, you know, our brain is, what's the word, idling. If I put the gear into somewhere, then we start to move and do making some karma. But because we don't take any action while we are sitting and letting go, you know, we are karmic nature, karmic self is still there and working, but we are not being pulled by that karmic way of thinking. This is a really important point. So our Zazen doesn't make us, you know, to become completely enlightened person who is completely free from the ego-centered, discriminating mind, but it's still working. But our what is this? center of gravity is not here, but here. And we are sitting on the bottom of the ocean, which is always quiet and peaceful. That is my understanding of Dogen Zenji Shikantaza and what Uchiyama-roshi is saying here. And this is what I have been doing for 40 years, since I was 19. You know, I have been practicing, you know, this Zazen, especially, you know, at, in my teacher's lineage. We have 5-day session. During the session, we do really nothing but sitting. We have no lecture, no chanting, no work period, no doksan, no nothing but zazen, except 3 meals a day. And we sit, so we sit from 4 in the morning until 9 in the evening, except 3 meals. And we continue this sitting for 5 days. And we have this at Antaiji, we have this session 10 times a year, except February and August, because it's too cold in February and too hot in August in Kyoto. That means, you know, almost every 3 weeks I sat 5 days in this way. And that was in my early 20s. It was really difficult to practice, very painful, of course, and often very boring. And, you know, in my early 20s, I had a lot of energy. So to be still is most difficult thing. But that is my practice. And I sat in this practice in this way in my 20s, and in my 30s, and in my 40s, and 50s, and now I'm in my 60s. I feel I'm really fortunate, you know, I can, you know, continue. I have been continuing this sitting almost entire my adult life. That means I can see, you know, this movement, these waves from this kind of a still point. You know, so for me, this Zazen is like an anchor of a ship. If there's no anchor, you know, I may go somewhere else, and I don't care. And I don't think my thinking is delusion. My thinking is simply coming and going, and the basis of my thinking is distorted copy of this copy of the reality, that is my perception. And based on my perception, I make judgment and I make decision and do this and that. But by continuously sitting and see and letting go and see these simply coming and going, that we can learn it, we don't need to follow our thinking. And of course, some thinking, some thought might be like thinking like first of the Eightfold Noble Path, like thinking. And others are really distorted, almost crazy, or fantasy. And when we continue to see in this way, by letting go, we start to see there is a certain pattern in my thinking. And of course, during Zazen, I cannot observe and think about what is this pattern means. I keep just letting go. But after we finish sitting, we can think, why this pattern is repeatedly coming and going. And it is really, how can I say, to me, important practice to become, really understand my way of thinking and what is the not only the this moving part, but how, you know, the pattern of this moving, how or where come from. In that way, we can be really friendly and intimate with this person by not clinging and grasping our thinking and go somewhere else, taking action. So we can see, in a sense, not really objectively, but without grasping, why, you know, this thought, you know, repeatedly coming and going. Why I think this is wrong and this is right. For example, by practicing continuously in this way, I find out, could you close the door? That, how can I say? It's about 10 years after I started to practice this way, I find, you know, that this pattern of our thinking coming and going deeply came from my desire. I think desire or a tendency I had since I was very young, like a 3 or 4 years old, you know, baby. You know, when we sit this way a long time, you know, for example, during session, first or second day, you know, these waves are, you know, very big about our, you know, thinking about our daily things, what I did or what I have to do after this session. But after a few days, our mind become more calmful. So the wave is not like this, but like this. And yet, and also the thought coming up is not about what we did yesterday or what I have to do tomorrow, or why this person said that just such a thing to me, or something like very concrete things. But when our mind calmed down, how can I say, our memory from our childhood, even those experiences I usually don't remember, even forget, you know, somehow come up as like a reality. That is how we become intimate and friendly with who I am, not only this moment in my 60s, but I can be, okay, communicate with this, you know, 3 or 4 year boy. And that was really amazing thing that we, you know, experience in our Zazen by letting go. If we grasp from the current thinking, you know, we can only think what is happening these days. But when we release from that kind of day-to-day things, we start to communicate with myself when I was 6 or 5, or I was a teenager, or when I was 20 years, in my 20s. It's a really interesting thing. And what I wanted to say is the one tendency, desire or tendency I had since I was very young, like 3 or 4 years, is my desire to be a good boy. I wanted to be a good boy since I was like 3 or 4 years old. And I couldn't. Even I wanted to be a bad boy. And when I became a teenager, I didn't like that. So I intentionally try to be a bad boy, but not so successful. But to be a good boy is a difficult thing. It requires a lot of effort. Before I do something, you know, I have to learn what other people expect from me, and I try to do that thing those people, you know, my parents or teachers or friends expect from me. So before do something, I have to think what I should be, what I should do. That means what, you know, my parents, teachers or other people expect from me. It's really a difficult thing, and I didn't like this, you know. When I see my friends, it seems they are doing much kind of a directly express their desire, or they do what they want to do. I thought that is more healthy way of life than, you know, thinking, you know, what I have to do to be a good boy. So I hate that way of life. That is why after I became 15, 16, I became a high school student, I tried to reject everything I was expected from my parents, teachers, and society. So I try not to be a good boy. That's why I stopped studying, you know, as a good boy in the classroom. I often escaped from the classroom and went to a library and read books about philosophy or religion or literature. And in Japan at that time, we are always expected to study hard and go to a good university and getting a good job and making a lot of money. I reject that way of life, so I try to be a bad boy. And that's why I become a Buddhist monk. That is the thing my parents didn't expect it. And my, you know, the society didn't, you know, Japanese society as a whole, that is the time of rapid, you know, economical growth. So the entire Japanese society is all, you know, making effort, working hard to make money. And to be a monk and just sit without, you know, doing anything, you know, making money, I think that was a worst thing. And so I kind of, betrayed entire expectation from my parents and by becoming a Buddhist monk. So that is a kind of my way to become not become a bad boy, but stop being a good boy. And I started to, you know, study Buddhism and practice Zazen. And after 10 years I practiced in this way, I really liked this practice. But after about 10 years, that means when I was about 30 years, I found, you know, fortunately at the time I had a lot of physical difficulties. I had a pain on my neck, shoulder, elbow and knees. Because of too much work in Massachusetts. At that time I found, you know, before that I have to say, I really like this practice because this is good for nothing. You know, people expect, you know, me doing something good, but I, to be stopped, you know, being a good boy, I decided to be good for something good, that is good for nothing, and this is the Zen. So I thought I have been practicing, you know, this good for nothing, wholeheartedly. But after I became 30s and my body was half broken and I couldn't practice in the way I could, I was in the trouble. And I found, why this is a trouble? If my practice is good for nothing, even if I cannot do it, what is the problem? And I found that, you know, even after I became a Buddhist and my teacher's disciple and practiced this way, I still, you know, not in my mind, I thought I become a bad boy. But, you know, during this period, I want to, you know, study Buddhism more than other people. And I want to sit more than other people, so I often, almost always, went to Zendo before other people came. You know, that kind of mentality, I didn't know that is kind of a continuation of tendency or desire to be a good boy. So I want, even after I became a Buddhist monk, I want to be a good monk, or a good disciple of my teacher, or a good student of Buddha. That is still, you know, against my thinking, it's still working deeper in my consciousness. So around that time, I found, you know, that is the thing, you know, that create this pattern of thinking. You know, in whatever situation, the point of my way of thinking is, how can I be a good boy? Or at least, how can other people think I'm a good boy? That I found that is all about, you know, by using you know, when I was a teenager, I knew nothing about Buddhism, but I used my own words, not difficult words, and sometimes I used philosophical words. After I started to practice Buddhism, I used a Buddhist word, Buddhist vocabularies. But whatever I think is, how can I be a good boy, or at least not be a bad boy? I found that is all about. And after that, I can be really free from, you know, this pattern. Not being free from doesn't mean this doesn't occur at all. But see, you know, like I can see, you know, the baby or a young boy or girl behave in such a way. So I'm not sure, you know, the psychological word inner child is the same thing or not. But somehow I can, you know, even I can use, you know, very lofty, you know, vocabulary or logics based on Buddhism. Still, the basic point is, I want to be a good boy. When I see that, I find, you know, that is okay. You know, to be a good boy is fine, but I'm not controlled by that desire. I think that is important point. And my practice of, you know, continuous practice of this letting go allow me to see through, you know, not, you know, my thinking at that time on, but I can see the you know, almost the same pattern in whatever condition or situation I have, whatever logic or vocabulary I use. That's the deepest thing is really simple. I want to be a good boy. That's all. Then, you know, I can be a kind of a parent of that good boy. And you don't need to be a good boy. You can be, you know, free a little more. And I think to me, that is a really great revelation. Of course, even now, it's difficult for me to be a bad boy. But I know I don't need to be a good boy by, you know, making effort. but I can, you know, behave in a natural way. And unfortunately, my natural way is being not so bad person. So I have to do the way I have to do. But I feel now I am not controlled by that, you know, desire of good boy. So to understand who really, who I am, and what is the deepest kind of energy or motivation, I think this way or that way, or I behave this way or that way in certain situation or condition. I think that is karma. And by stop doing anything based on those thoughts come from my consciousness, I can be free from my karmas. Still, I have, when I, you know, stand up, I'm out of Zendo, I have to, how can I say, be friendly and utilize my karmic, you know, tendency to be shohaku. And that is a kind of a little subtle difference. But this subtle difference makes really great difference, at least in my life. So, you know, when we practice this way, letting go doesn't mean kill them or eliminate them, but letting go means, how can I say it? In a sense, letting go is, I think, has two sides. One is by letting go and I don't take any action based on those thoughts. This is a complete, perfect negation of those thoughts. But by letting go, we don't eliminate them. So it's a complete acceptance of those thoughts. We just see those thoughts coming and going as just coming and going. By, you know, so we cannot, you know, how can I say, attain so-called enlightenment after 1 year of practice of this. But we have to continue this practice 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years until end of our life, because this is moment by moment. You know, letting go is moment by moment. But I think this practice become, as I said, anchor of my life. And then, not because of my karmic thinking, but when I hear in my way, when I hear a Buddha's voice, I really do take action. Not from my, you know, my voice from the good boy desire, but when I hear the Buddha's voice, do this way or that way, or do this thing or that thing, then I take action. So, you know, this practice is really meaningful and important and powerful, at least in my life. Well, it's already 11. And I just read these two paragraphs again. I don't think I need to explain. This is a very simple and understandable statement. So are desires, delusions, and thought, like A, B, and C, all things that primarily do not exist, because it's a delusion or illusion, at least in our Zazen, but and should be denied. As I said, we don't deny, we let go. Of course not, because as I mentioned before, even thoughts which produce desire and delusion are a manifestation of a power of life. Even those ego-centered thinking came from our life force. And if we try to kill that delusions or desires, then we injure our life. So killing is not our practice, but we need to become friend of those, you know, baby or childish desires. Yet, if we continue the thought and become carried away by desire and delusion, life becomes obscured and stifled, and we can only see from one point of view and grasping this view, even though we are like a frog in the well. That means the frog in the bottom of the well can see only this part of the sky, but the frog thinks this is the entire sky. But by letting, and our view is the same. I can view things only from my point of view. My point of view is Japanese Buddhist point of view. It's really tiny part of the sky. But I think this is really absolutely right. That is a problem, so we have to let go of this, even a Buddhist view. So we wake up to Z prime, and from this standpoint of waking up, we are able to see that thought, desires, and delusions are all the scenery of our life. This word scenery is a translation of Zen terms. Because Uchamaras used very kind of a colloquial expression. In a sense, he translates traditional Zen expression into very modern colloquial Japanese expression. This scenery is the translation of fuko in traditional Zen word. Fuko, this fu is wind, and ko is light. This means depending upon the weather, the wind blow different ways, different direction, and sometimes it's really pleasant breeze, sometimes it's really violent, you know, strong wind. And light differ, you know, it can be really, you know, bright, or it can be completely dark. So this is a, you know, condition of the earth in which we have to live. We cannot escape from, you know, the changing of weather. And this, so this is, this can be translated as a condition, but Uchamura translates as to modern Japanese, fukei. This means scenery, scenery of the things. And the scenery is also, you know, influenced by the weather. It changes. Sometimes it's very pleasant. Sometimes it might be really difficult or painful even. But somehow this is only place we can live. So we have to accept it and work with the situation or condition. That to mean that kind of condition we need to live in, he used this word, scenery. And one time he said, you know, the scenery of our life is like when we travel by train, things are changing, and but we, you know, move, you know, towards certain direction. And he said this, you know, movement like waves in our mind is the scenery of Zazen. So we, if we are not deceived by those thoughts, we can be a good friend, and even we can enjoy those, you know, in a sense, fictitious fixed way of thinking. You know, almost always we are making stories about our life, and the hero or heroines of our story is me, always. And we want to make this story happy ending. To do so, we interpret the situation self-centered way, to in the way we can easily accept. But when we see, you know that things happening in our mind, then we can enjoy this story. You know, our story is often, we make often worst scenario or best scenario. But reality is almost always halfway between those worst scenario and best scenario. That is how we don't need to be deceived and take action based on those best scenario or worst scenario. But we can see, try to see the reality as much as they are. So there is scenery only where there is life. So we are alive, and in the case of human being, human form of life, we have brain as a part of our body, and the function of our body, our brain, is create fantasies, whether it fantasies or very rational, logical thinking. That is what's happening here, and some thought can be useful, but some thought is completely out of the track. But still, sometimes I think this is real thing. We are deceived by those fantasies and go somewhere else. But if we see this really happening in our mind, then we can enjoy it and being friendly. We can see, this is the same thing happening again, and we can just we can just make a joke. While we are living in this world, there will be happiness and unhappiness, favorable and adverse conditions, interesting and boring things. There will be pleasant times and painful times. Times to laugh and times to be sad. All of these are part of the scenery of our life. Because we plunge into this scenery by thinking this is really real thing, become carried away by it and end up running helter-skelter, we become frantic and we suffer. In the Zen, even though various lifelike images appear to us, we are able to see this scenery of life for what it is, by wake up to the prime. So, for according to Uchiyama Roshi, this is our Zazen. So, our Zazen is to simply keep awakening by letting go of those fictitious thinking and return right now, right here. That's why Sawadeo said Zazen is good for nothing, only be here. We don't go somewhere else, even that is Buddha's pure land. Buddha's pure land is not somewhere else, right now, right here. Well, that is I have to say about these two paragraphs. Any question, please?
This is a question that came up during one of our Thursday evening conversations, I think when you weren't here. And it's about letting go. Is that an action, something that we have to do, or is that something that just happens?
Good question.
It's not my question, actually.
Well, when I say my action, there is a separation between me and the action, and this is my action. But I think in our Zazen there's no such separation. It's not me as a, like an operator of this machine. You know, I use the analogy of driving a car. The difference between driving a car and our Zazen is, in the case of Zazen, in the case of driving a car has the operator, owner and operator. Car cannot move by itself, but somehow our body and mind has no operator, has no owner and operator. Somehow it moves. So it's really interesting and inconceivable how this, you know, returning and letting go happens. I think we do, entire body and mind. It's not a matter of I make decision and I give the order to my body and mind and stop doing this and that. If we have such a structure based on the separation between me and my body and mind, then I can say this is my action. But I think the point is this me disappeared. Otherwise we cannot wake up from our thinking, because this is my thinking. So this is a very tricky part. Of course, we need our, as I think Nick asked last Thursday, we need effort. But is this my effort or not? You know, of course, you know, without the effort, you know, we continue thinking while we sleep entire period of Zazen to wake up or to stop thinking, to stop letting go of thought. We need to make effort. But this effort is not necessarily my effort. I think that is the point Dogen Zen said, you know, when we convey ourselves to all beings, even that all, you know, our thought in my mind during Zazen is all things. If we convey ourselves to all things and carry out practice enlightenment, it's delusion. And all myriad things come toward me and allow this person carry out practice enlightenment. Or even this myriad dharmas come to the self and carry out practice enlightenment through the self. So in this case, the subject is not me or Shohaku, but somehow, in Uchiyama Roshi's expression, this life force allow me to wake up, allow me to stop thinking that is not real reality. So, you know, in a sense, our effort is not our effort. Letting go is not my action. And yet, without this body and mind, there is no such action. So this is kind of a difficult point to say. Using words, somehow when we talk and think using words, I have to say I wake up or I let go. But how can I let go myself? You know, those things happening in my mind is happening within myself. So I think basically this is a problem of language. Does it make sense?
Yes, and I think it's also a problem of thought. You know, in Zazen, when my mind goes off somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Then suddenly it just comes back, and I realize, oh, I'm sitting, you know, and I come back to sitting. But it's not, I didn't decide, oh, now I should come back.
Right.
Right? It just it feels like it just happens.
Right. I think it's like, you know, a cloud in the sky. Somehow it's appeared. Mm-hmm. Somehow it disappeared. I don't know whose decision, whose effort. Yeah, it's a part of, you know, how can I say, universal movement, or in Dogen Zen's expression, total function. We, you know, this life force allow me to wake up. It's not my desire to wake up. Please.
And there was also the point that you made about listening for the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Or listening.
Yeah, not my voice, but Buddha's voice. Wake me up.
But that suggests a separation right there.
If we think Buddha is someone else.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I say, when I hear Buddha's voice, it's not voice from outside of me, but it's not my ego-centered voice. So this distinction also is very subtle and tricky, in a sense tricky. We deceive ourselves to say, you know, this is Buddha's voice. And we can do crazy things. No, that is possible to become kind of a fanatic Buddhist. Buddha told me Buddhist.